This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Oh, do we have a Thursday show for you? It is VSiN by the Books. I'm Dave Ross here downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. He is our closer, Jensen Lewis, back home in Cleveland, Ohio. Boy, Jensen, College World Series, and we're going to get to all this in highlights and headlines. Oh, my goodness. I mean, did you see that coming, that drama that we had last night in that ninth inning?
First of all, good morning to everyone except those in Fayetteville.
Oh, man.
Gil, I actually had gone to bed just because, better part of the story, Michelle and I went to a golf simulator yesterday. It's been pouring rain here for the last couple of days. So, like, we got a little stir crazy. Let's get out. Let's just go swing it a little bit. So we played 18 holes at Doral.
Oh, whoa.
And so, you know, got to like the last four holes and, you know, energy starting to run out of the tank for her, starting to get tired. And I'm starting to feel muscles I haven't used in probably a decade. So safe to say we got home, we got in the chairs, we watched a little Love Island, you know, just a little mindless TV. And then I fell asleep right around like 9:30. So when I got up a little early because I'm like, all right, I got to watch the end of it. Buddy, I could not believe what I saw. First and foremost, if you had the run line for Arkansas, rest in peace.
Oh,
I mean, that is just ridiculous. But we'll get into it. But
yes,
just a wild, wild end to that game. No question about it.
You played Doral. You played the Blue Monster. That's really impressive. And I love that because you're right, man. When you don't swing it for a while, all of a sudden you wake up and you go, what's sore? Everything's sore. Yeah, golf, I know it's a leisurely activity. You can pull some things, that's for sure. Great show lined up here on this Thursday. Greg Peterson's going to join us here in this hour to get his best bets here in Major League Baseball on the day. And the great Mike Palm will be in studio here for Palm's Pressing 3. Again, for everybody that might not be aware, we do not go over those questions beforehand. Jensen does not know what those questions will be, but he's always on his toes, so he'll be ready for the answers. And then hour number three, Stephen Hennessy is going to join us here from Golf Digest. Always love catching up with Stephen. It's the last Elevated event already, and it's getting ready to start here in Connecticut. So the Travelers, we'll get Stephen's thoughts there and try to look ahead also to the final major of the year, which is going to be next month over there in Northern Ireland. And then Zoe, the one-man gang himself, Lorenzo Alexander. I think he played almost every position you could possibly play in the NFL besides maybe quarterback. That might be the only one. We'll catch up with Lorenzo Alexander, what these guys are doing at this point of the year to really get ready for training camps and beyond here, especially for those veterans out there, what we're looking for there. So without further ado, let's get to it. Today's edition of Highlights and Headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
And we begin it today with what's going on in L.A. And how about this? The rich, they get a little bit richer. Now, the Buss family has agreed to sell the majority ownership of the Lakers to Mark Walton, who's been a minority owner since 2021. So holding about 20% of the Lakers. Now, will step in as the majority owner via a deal roughly worth, Jensen Lewis, $10 billion. Dollars. I say again, $10 billion with a B dollars. So that means it's going to mark the conclusion of over 46 years of Buss family ownership. Of course, it began with Jerry, for those that remember, like I do, back in 79, continued under the daughter Jeannie Buss until 2013. So Jeannie will remain here. Despite this transfer of control, Jeannie will stay on as team governor, whatever that means, and then maintaining an influential leadership role. Jeannie doesn't have to worry about anything for the rest of her time here. Once you sell out and you get that $10 billion that we're talking about here, Jensen, what do you make of this? And it is kind of odd for Laker fans to think that a bus will not be technically running the Lakers for the first time since 1979.
Yeah. So you go back to 1979, that purchase price of $67 million. What would the modern day equivalent be? It's almost $300 million. If that gives people an idea with a cumulative rate of inflation. That's a 342% inflation. So the other part of this too, and I'm not sure they thought about it then, but if you just simply index the S&P 500 over that time, you would have made another $3 billion. on top of that. So perhaps some recency bias, but overall, the highest, most expensive price for a North American professional franchise in history. As valuable, I mean, you know it as well as anyone, the Dallas Cowboys, mm-hmm. arguably the most valuable professional franchise we have here in North America. But very anxious to see what this does. And we see it a lot with new ownership. How do they want to operate the team? What is a priority for them? Is it making money? Is it being good? Is it both? Very, very big tectonic plates shifting here for one of the most visible and storied franchises in the NBA.
1979, I'm sure Laker fans know it well. They happened to draft some guy that year coming out of Michigan State named Irvin Magic Johnson. Maybe it changed the franchises and the buses and Magic and then Kareem. And then we saw all the lineage of the Lakers, and it really started right there in 1979, that's for sure. Okay, we talked about it here, that chaos in Omaha. If you had an Arkansas ticket, as Jensen alluded to, I do feel for you today. They are out. That's going to be devastating for those kids. After LSU comes back with a walk-off in the ninth, 6-5, to get the win, eliminating Arkansas here from the College World Series. Jensen, just take us through it, because now I think for people that had that all-SEC or bus ticket, they thought, wow, this is the way we get there with Arkansas, and then you don't get there now, and now it's going to be Coastal Carolina taking on LSU in the title game.
Yeah, so, you know, Arkansas trailed LSU by one headed into the top of the eighth inning. They get a pair of runs. Ryan Helfrich, a fielder's choice, but they end up taking the lead 3-2. LSU, Jared Jones gets a home run to tie it. And then a pair of runs for Arkansas in the top of the ninth inning. But it was the bottom of the ninth, and again, you never assume a double play.
Right.
Dave, but when you're a pitcher, you're like, I want the ball hit to the SEC Player of the Year in Behiva Aloy, the shortstop for Arkansas. And as you watch the play in real time, he goes to third for a force out. And as you watch the replay, it's as tailor-made as it gets for a not just an inning ending, Dave. It's a game ending double play that would send you to a winner take all game tonight. That's not the case. The inning continues. There's a ball hit to left field. And Abelon, the left fielder, slips, and it caroms off his glove. Mm. And both runs come around to score. Winning run is at second base. And LSU then gets a walk-off single from Jones to send them to the College World Series final. It does not get any more heartbreaking. There has been a lot talked about the curse on Arkansas baseball right now, because almost the same thing happened back when they had an opportunity to win a national title the last time they were in this spot in Omaha. And I tell you, there are just things in baseball that are unexplainable. But Dave, I've never seen, and I was just telling our crew in the control room before the show, I would say 900 out of 1,000 times when you see that ball the way it was hit to Aloy, that's it. All you're thinking is, boom, this is tailor-made 6-4-3 ball game. Let's lace it up and play tomorrow for all the marbles. I mean, just as heartbreaking and bad a beat for bettors out there. If you had Arkansas money line, if you had the under 10.5, Dave, oh my God, this is a horrible beat in that right in and of itself.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Where does that come from? Where in the baseball brain does that come from that goes, I'm not going to start this around the horn. I'm going to take the force out. Is that just not aware of the situation that all of a sudden you just blank in that spot and go force out instead of going around the horn?
That would be the first question. I would not ask it in the press conference, because right, you're not going to get maybe a true answer from the player. I would have pulled Behiva Aloy aside in a dugout setting and be like, first of all, before the pitch is thrown, what's your mindset?
Because
you already want to be at least somewhat predetermined to that. And then once it was hit, what did you see? Did you feel you had any time to go to set? Because there was plenty from what I saw in the replay, Dave.
Yeah.
Looked like there was plenty of time to be able to start that turn.
Tough way. And then the confluence of events afterward to lead to your demise if you're Arkansas and not have a chance here to play for the College World Series. That's got to be a tough one here. But it is LSU and Coastal as they get an easy win here yesterday, 11-3 over Louisville. So the championship is set. You know, Danny Higgins has been doing a really good job filling in for Brandon Valesky, our producer this week. But why Tomczyk's back there as well, And I wonder if Wyatt had something to do with this next highlight and headline. It is that the Braves all of a sudden are getting hot. And Chris Sale was very he was tough yesterday against the Metropolitans. Untouchable, dare we say, against the Metropolitans. Struck out 7, gave up only 5 hits, 1 walk, no runs over 8 2/3. Didn't quite get it done, but the Braves get it done. And I always say, don't look now. Okay, you can look. Here come the Braves. Do I have to start worrying about a 3-horse race in the NL East?
No, you don't. 11 games out. Unless there is just massive collapse here from your Mets and the Philadelphia Phillies, it's a 2-horse race the rest of the way. But you are now within earshot here of a wild card spot for the Braves. 5.5 games out after that win. You're now back over water, or at least got your neck above water there in the run differential department at plus 18. And reinforcements feel like they're coming with some momentum at their back. So great win, great performance overall. Again, talked about that make the playoff price here for the Braves. Something you want to jump in on yesterday? I'd absolutely advocate for that again today.
Yeah, I'm with you. And again, we kind of felt like had the chance to bury them in game one of the series. They come off the deck, get that one. Now it's 2 in a row. That momentum starts to build a little bit down there in the ATL. If they get in, they would be the proverbial team you don't want to see in the postseason. If you're somebody else in the National League, they might be the scary team. And I wonder if this means Chris Sale is not on the trade deadline. We'll find out all those tentacles as the Braves sadly start to win a little bit. Let's talk some NFL. And, oh, man, we can't wait. It's just about football season. That's coming up next year. It's VSiN by the Books.
Tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on a Thursday. Of course, the NBA Finals could be all said and done tonight. So we'll get to game 6 tonight in Indianapolis as the Pacers try to stave off elimination. I don't know that we use the word stave in any other way unless it's sports with eliminate. Like, have you ever found yourself saying stave for any other reason other than sports vernacular?
No, I've used the word stay and very much appropriate since you watched A Few Good Men last night.
That's
so
right.
That's it. Yeah, that's a great call, man. Some of that vocab just not readily apparent in normal vernacular, that's for sure.
Only in sports, but we love it. We'll see if they can stave off elimination tonight. These teams we're going to talk about in the NFL. We're going to see who can go worst to first. And it does seem to happen. Now, it did not happen last year. But traditionally, you get one of these each and every year. Now, the hard thing to do is identify which division we actually think that this could be a possibility, a real possibility of going last to first. So let's start off first in the AFC. And when you look at the AFC teams that finished dead last year, and normally, you know, Jensen, you get the easier schedule when you play that last place schedule. So there are some built-in advantages when you're coming off the deck like you were a year ago. I feel like everybody's going to look to the Patriots this year and say that would be maybe the team with Mike Vrabel, second-year quarterback. Things felt like they were really going well in the right direction. And all of a sudden, now when you bring in Vrabel, you expect the defense to be better. This was a 4-win team a year ago. You look at the points four per game, not good. I mean, 289, that's it. And 417 against, do that math. That's not good for the Patriots. Again, the four contenders will be the Browns in the north, the Titans in the south, and the Raiders out west. But with those Patriots, Jensen, I feel like that's the team that people are saying, yeah, if there's somebody who can go worst to first, it could be them. Do you see it that way?
I always want to be leery of teams that are so incredibly popular to talk about and are very present in the media in a first year coach, albeit yes, Mike Vrabel is not a traditional first year coach. He's done this before. You have a couple of things answered, right? You have your quarterback, or at least your franchise quarterback you want to move forward with. You have a defensive minded guy that has already brought in, you know, a fair amount of those reinforcements. You know, you look at the division. We would say that there is probably an infinitesimally small chance that the New England Patriots overtake the Buffalo Bills. So they will be improved, Dave. They will not win the AFC East.
Okay, I see it the same way you do, too. Like, let's pump the brakes a little bit on this Patriots train. Because when you look at that win total of 8.5 now, that would say if this is a 9-win football, if they hit that over, and by the way, it's juice to the over at minus $1.20, that would tell you, oh, well, 9-win team, you know, things, if Buffalo is not the Buffalo that we all expect them to be, then all of a sudden they're right there in the mix. I'm with you. I would not advocate, by the way, playing that over right now. And I, again, should be an improved football team. We all agree on that. But to that degree, 5 wins better with Vrabel and a second-year quarterback, that feels like it's pretty tough sledding to go. And then you really are talking about the Bills, and can you really theoretically beat the Buffalo Bills this year? I don't see that happening there. So I'm with you. The team that I'm looking at is maybe a team that in I like Houston in this division. Let me just say it like this. But if you're making me pick one out of this four-team group to possibly upset the apple cart and go worst to first, I would look at Tennessee. Now, let me make my case for Tennessee here in the South. I know it was a 3-win team a year ago. They only scored 311 points. The defense gave up 460. Not good. But I do believe that when you bring in the Callahans, and certainly Brian Callahan coming over from Cincinnati, and you look at Dad running the offensive line, and I start to say, okay, if this is what this offense, he needed the trigger man to run this offense. And now they feel like they've got him in the first pick in the draft. So all of a sudden, if you look at Cam Ward, and I'm not saying he's going to be Jaden Daniels, but if you could say that's why we took him first overall, is to make a Jaden Daniels year one leap in a division that I think we think is gettable, that's where I might make the case that Tennessee would have the best chance out of these four in the AFC to go from worst to first, and really does start with the division. If we look at the Jags and we say, all right, they're not all the way back. Liam Cohen coming in. We still don't know what we have in Trevor Lawrence, right? Houston, who I really like, by the way, I still think they're going to win the division. But if you said, all right, are they really that good with C.J. Stroud year three? D'Amico Ryans has done a great job with the defense. Are they that good? I think they are. But I think if you make a case the other way, and Indianapolis looks like a mess right now with what's going on at quarterback. Is it going to be Anthony Richardson? He's got a bad shoulder still. Is it going to be Daniel Jones? Can you make the case that Tennessee would be the team that you'd want to circle, even though their win total is only 5.5 and the Patriots is 8.5?
I had circled Tennessee as well with you, and for similar reasons, right? You think that some of the regression or injury issues with Houston and Jacksonville, and again, we talk about first-year head coaches, right? We'll see what Liam Cohen does down there in Jacksonville. Houston was the darling last year, the media darling, if you will. Mm-hmm. And again, I still believe if the Tank Dell injury doesn't happen, and not just how it affected the offense on the field, right, Dave? But God, when as big a morale punch and upsetting of a locker room and camaraderie as it could possibly get. So, you know, with that being said, there's no question this is the easy one. I think in our heart of hearts, listen, the Browns aren't doing anything against Pittsburgh and Baltimore, or at least getting anywhere near double-digit wins. The Raiders could be better, but you could make the argument that that division in the AFC is going to be as bananas hard as there is in all of pro football. So, I think the Titans certainly are there. And if the glass is half full and Cam Ward shows you, imagine if Cam Ward finds a way to win in Mile High in week one.
Oh boy.
And they shock the world and they beat the Rams in their home opener in week two. Oh my goodness gracious. You will hear Jaden Daniels 2.0 left, right, and center in the mainstream media.
Yeah, remember Bo Nix last year with Denver, how he turned around their franchise with Sean Payton, certainly Jaden Daniels in D.C. These rookie quarterbacks are having some success a little bit earlier rather than later. Tennessee, by the way, is plus 650 to win the South. The Patriots to win the East is not as long right now. It's you can get almost 5-1 here, 475 I'm seeing in the marketplace as well. So it shows you the numbers there. Now, with the Browns and the Raiders, okay, Cleveland, the 30-1 to win the division. 30-1 to win the division. Okay. I think Shador just had some issues yesterday. We thought he'd be the first pick possibly in the draft. Went 101 yesterday on the road. So a little bit different there for Shador getting a ticket. I don't even know if he's going to be the day one guy. We don't know if it's going to be Flacco. We don't know who it's going to be yet. I mean, is there any case to be made in the land? Look at their win total, 4-6. Juice, it is juice to the over here at 4.5 to $1.60, which surprises me a little bit. Can you make a semblance of a case for the Browns?
I mean, there's a case because they're going to play football this year, and they'll be in that division. That's about it. Here's what you're up against, right? Pittsburgh top five defense. Again, no signs of that. Hearing that, you know, TJ Watt and company, both sides moving towards a deal, and they want that to get done sooner than later. We believe that the voters got it wrong last year. Lamar Jackson should have been the MVP.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, he still plays quarterback for Baltimore. Joe Burrow is going to have one of the high octane offenses in all of the NFL in that division. I wrote down here, Browns need a miracle. That's how they go worst to first. Mm. And I don't see that in sight anywhere near here.
Can I make a case for the Raiders out here in the desert at 20-1 to win the West? And all I would say, if you made me, you charge me with that case as a prosecuting attorney, and I've got to go in front of the man and state my case, I would say, Your Honor, I've got an adult leading this group of men. I've got a man who's been there and done that in Pete Carroll, and he knows what the hell he's doing. Unfortunately, he's going up against three other guys in the division that also know what they're doing in Andy Reid and John Harbaugh and certainly Sean Payton now. But it would be in Pete I trust, right? 6.5 is a win total. It's juice to the over, $1.45. If the division cannibalizes itself, is that the case to be made that Pete Carroll, even if we can't see it right now, he sees it in Geno Smith. That's why he's brought him back. And he knows how to win. And in Pete Carroll, I trust.
I don't think it's as far-fetched as people believe. Mm. And I've already been on record with you that I believe the Chargers do have as good a shot as anyone to unseat the Ooh. Current champions there with the Kansas City Chiefs. So, and here again, it's the early part of the schedule, right? You're going to get some division games for the Raiders. If you win those early, then obviously that upsets the apple cart in a big, big way.
20-1, if the Chiefs are gettable, I don't think it would be the Raiders. I'm with you. It might be Chargers and or Broncos first and foremost. It's going to be an interesting division if the Chiefs are not the Chiefs we all remember for the last 7 years. By the way, you want to talk more football? We've got the betting guide coming out July 1st, $175 right now. That's going to give you full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl. Yes, we're already talking Super Bowl. Can't wait. VSiN.com/subscribe right now. $175 gets you covered all the way into February. Don't go anywhere. Greg Peterson is up next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back. VSiN by the Books on this Thursday edition. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you, the man that never sleeps. We always love catching up with Greg Peterson. Give him a follow on X. Does a great job here on the network. GUnit_81 joins us here in the Progressive Guest Line. And, Greg, I don't know what's happening here with the Colorado Rockies. Jensen and I have talked a lot about it here. 9.5 wins was their total for the entire month. I believe they have 8 already. We're like, I hope this isn't going to be like turn out to be one of those terrible beats if you took the over and they're going to freeze at 8. But I don't know what's getting into these guys. But, Greg, they're playing pretty good baseball. Can we actually back the Rocks again today? $1.36 dogs here in D.C. to the Nationals.
Yeah, I was one of those people. I was laughing at that 9.5 win total thinking, oh, this is like the easiest under ever. So I am right there with you. I do not know where this is coming from. I'm going to continue to fade. And maybe it'll be at my own peril. But I just am still not a believer that it's necessarily the Colorado Rockies being good. I think that it's a matter of circumstance because a lot of these wins have come against Miami Marlins, who they've been rough, to say the least. Mm. And the Washington Nationals are currently riding a double-digit losing streak themselves. Like with the Washington Nationals, it's went way downhill, but there should be some positivity for Trevor Williams. He's got a 5.71 ERA, fielding independent more than 1.8 points lower, has kept the ball in the yard, hasn't given up a lot of walks. Omar Marquez yesterday took the bump for the Colorado Rockies. He was doing for some positivity. Got it. I think that we might see something similar here for Trevor Williams. And I really do like this total under. Like right now we're seeing the total at 9.5, even with the Rockies scoring 10 plus runs twice this week, still dead last in the big leagues in terms of runs per game on the road, still dead last in terms of on-base percentage on the road as well. And the Washington Nationals, frankly, aren't necessarily hitting themselves. We've seen it all throughout the series. And Chase Solander, who's going to be getting the start for the Colorado Rockies, about a 6.82 ERA, falls by more than 2 points away from home. Coors Field can sometimes be a fickle fiend, has been for Dolander all season long. So I take a look at the 9.5, think that's set too high. I like the under, and I'm back in on the Washington Nationals on the run line. Again, perhaps at my own peril.
All right. I love where the handicap is there in our nation's capital. Today is what we say a day of days for Greg Peterson, because there are so many day games that Greg will be just having himself go left, right, center, just trying to follow everything. We get a little traditional double dip here in the Windy City, the Cubs and the Cardinals. Interesting, the pitching matchups here. Eric Fetty, Sean Burke in game one, Michael McGreevy, Mike Vasil in game two. Give us your handicap. I'm anticipating targeting this first game, right, Greg? What do you have for us?
Exactly, and right now we are seeing this total. It opened up at an 8.5. I like the 8.5 under a little bit more than the 8, but I still think that here at about a minus 140 and you're able to get a plus 115 on the run line, they've got some value here, especially on the St. Louis Cardinals. With the Cardinals, they've been able to do a nice job of being able to play station-to-station baseball, and they are going up against the Chicago White Sox team that has been in the bottom five of the big leagues in terms of runs per game. Now, I will say this for the White Sox. They've been scoring north of 4 runs per game at home, fewer than 3 runs per game away from home. So they do have those home and road splits, but you do have a Chicago White Sox team that is a little bit depleted in the bullpen as well, because you mentioned Mike Vasil, who's going to be going in game number 2. He was legitimately their best reliever. That does deplete the bullpen a little bit more for them, so that makes things a little bit more interesting. Eric Fetty, very much a pitcher contact guy, getting fear that 6 strikeouts per 9 innings. But if you recall Eric Fetty, where he was pitching at this time last year, the Chicago White Sox. When he was pitching for the White Sox, he had a sub-2 ERA in this very ballpark. I think that he's going to be able to go out there, throw a relatively good gem. Like I said, really like that 8.5 under. And Nate, if I had to play it, I'd probably lean a little bit more towards the under, but value is starting to go a little bit more there. But I do take a look at this Chicago White Sox team, think that they're going to have their struggles really in both games of these doubleheaders, like especially in game number 1. Game number 2, I think that Vasil actually has a little bit of upside. With Vasil, I set about a plus 133 on the money line, so I'd be willing to take a little bit more of a look there, because at last check, because they were just posting up these openers, I was seeing a more around a plus 145, so I would actually be taking a look at the Cardinals game 1 and then come back with the White Sox in game 2.
What's the line, Mrs. Robinson? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. In north of the border, now that Edmonton's been knocked out of the Stanley Cup Finals and they can't win a Stanley Cup since 1993, are they all looking at Toronto? Has the nation of Canada turned their lonely eyes to the Blue Jays, who are only 2 games back of the Yankees now, Greg? Do they keep it rolling today against Arizona?
Well, they're certainly not turning their eyes to the Toronto Raptors, that's for sure. But I do think that for the Toronto Blue Jays, that there's quite a bit of value here, because they are going up against guy Ryan Nelson, who has been struggling a little bit, north of a 4 ERA, and the Diamondbacks bullpen is a big issue as well. Something that I've really been harping on the last few weeks in terms of handicapping baseball is these good slash bad bullpens. And I'm sorry, Arizona Diamondbacks, they're a bad bullpen. As a matter of fact, they had this game, in my opinion, 148 hours ago, that game on Tuesday. Bullpen gives it up after you had seen those long relievers be relatively good towards back half of the season. I think it was Shelby Miller, if I'm not mistaken, they yacked that one away. And for Kevin Gausman, has been a little bit of a rough go of it for him. Yeah, 7 out of his last 10 starts, has given up at least 3 runs. But if you look at the advanced numbers, the fielding independent more than a half a point lower than the ERA. I think that he goes out there, gives a nice start for a Blue Jays team that is getting their act together on offense. Have been lacking a little bit of the deep ball with being a bottom 8 team in the big leagues in terms of home runs per at bat. But you've got guys like Flagler Jr., George Springer, along with Bo Bichette, that are finding a way to be able to move the line. For Arizona, you know that they're going to be able to spice some offense as well. So I do think that here at the 8.5, you do have a little bit of value to the over. But I think that the Blue Jays, especially on a big plus number on the run line, have some value here riding with the Jays and that over.
Yeah, Blue Jays continue their ascent up the American League East, and now just two games back of the Yankees. All of a sudden, a three-horse race, maybe in a four-horse race, the way the Red Sox have played here in their last 10. Really good pitching matchup today out in the Bay Area here, Greg. We get Logan Webb for the Giants, ironically trying to avoid a sweep here at the hands of the Cleveland Guardians. Gavin Williams will go for Cleveland. You and I are on the same side here, buddy. I took an alternate run line here for the Giants at minus one. You're getting a little more aggressive here, and I like where your head's at with the Giants minus 1.5.
Absolutely. My spidey sense is tingling, and that's because I'm on Logan Webb here. And for Logan Webb, you just take a look at him throughout his career. He's got some of the biggest home and road splits of the year. 4.04 road ERA compared to a 2.64 home ERA. This is since he came into the big league level at the 2019 season, and his home runs per nine rate at home. And I recognize that San Francisco, very much a pitcher-friendly ballpark, but 0.4 home runs allowed per nine innings. Going up against Guardians lineup, that it's very top heavy. Jose Ramirez, Stephen Kwan, these guys get on base. And Carlos Santana, he's able to give you a little bit of something as well. We'll give him a little bit of a shout out. But and these guys at the bottom of the lineup all season long, it's been just a mismatch of different guys hitting at 225 or lower for the Giants. They do upgrade that lineup with Rafael Devers coming into the fold. It's exactly what they needed. Guys like Jungle Lee and company are finding a way on. And Willy Adames, he has been a big giant waste of money to begin the season. He does have 3 home runs, though, over the last 10 days. I think that Logan Webb goes out there, dominates, especially with Gavin Williams has given up 5 walks per 9 innings. On the flip side, should knock him out of the start early. And talked about bullpens being a bit important in the previous game. How about the Giants? Number one in terms of bullpen ERA. And I think that there's value moving forward on the Giants. I was seeing them plus $8 win the NL West. I do not think that that's a bad look. I think that they're going to have a really nice surge now that they've got Devers. So give me the Giants on the run line. And here at a 7, I do think that they get to Williams. I like that 7 over.
Let me give you a 2-for-1 here in the NL East, because the Phillies are playing down there in South Beach against the Marlins, and they're starting to make their way to make this a really competitive race here with the Mets, who are really struggling all of a sudden and have lost the last 2 against the Braves. How do you see those 2 games shaking out today?
Well, with the Phillies versus Miami Marlins, just too low of a total for me, especially with 2 teams that are in the bottom 8 in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Christopher Sanchez is rock solid, and that's a big reason why I'm willing to trust the Phillies on the run line. I think that they slug their way to victory in a little bit of higher scoring game, going up against a guy in Edward Cabrera who's got really good stuff. Sometimes he has no idea where the ball is going to go. He's giving up about 4 walks per 9 innings. And then flip side, the Atlanta Braves and the New York Mets. Spencer Strider coming off of a really nice start against the Colorado Rockies with 13 punchouts. But again, the Colorado Rockies have been the worst team in terms of run creation when they have been on the road this far this season. And I do think that Clay Holmes, the way that he's been able to induce soft contact, the way that he's been so steady all season long with the sub 3 ERA. And again, Mets backed up by the better bullpen. They've been a top 5 team in terms of bullpen ERA. I think that the Mets on the money line find a way to get this job done. And I do like that total over as well. Ronald Acuna Jr. helping out that Braves offense.
All right, Simon and Garfunkel turn their lonely eyes to Joe DiMaggio. We turn to Greg Peterson. Greg, we appreciate you early in the morning, my friend. Have a great day and enjoy that day baseball.
Oh, I will. No, nothing ludicrous about this. Always do appreciate it. Thank you.
Check out SharpPlays if you haven't done so already. Go to SharpPlays.com. They're going to help move that market for you. You don't have to go up against those billion-dollar sports books or those professional bettors out there. So, again, they've been around the block here since 2011. Unmatched transparency right there on the site. AI betting analysis, real-time global betting information, alerts directly from the pros. Check them out, SharpPlays.com.
To VSiN by the books, right here on VSiN.
Great conversation with Greg Peterson, talking all things Major League Baseball. Got a lot to get to here in the show today. Of course, we're going to be previewing what's going to happen tonight, game number 6. A lot more NFL talk. Appreciate everybody reaching out to us on X, saying, yeah, they can't wait 3 weeks to go before we get to training camps. We're pretty fired up about that as well. Lorenzo Alexander is going to join us in hour 3. Stephen Hennessy, as we get ready for the Travelers. That's getting ready to begin here, the last elevated event on the PGA Tour this year. And, of course, the great Mike Palm will be in studio in hour number 2. But right now, Jensen Lewis, I got to ask you, is this news or noise?
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise?
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Would you like to buy a baseball team? How about this? The Tampa Bay Rays down there in St. Pete, and I know you've played there, and I've been there a lot of times as a fan, are in advanced talks for a Florida home builder to purchase the team for $1.7 billion. That developer in Jacksonville, Patrick Zalupski is his name, according to multiple sources, who asked that is not to be named because the details are private, but here we go. So it's out there, Jensen. What do you make of this? Is this news or noise?
Massive news, just knowing that there had been a lot of trepidation just this year about what the cost to, renovate, refurbish Tropicana Field. Obviously, with the hurricane coming through there, it not only decimated the community at large, but it forced the Rays to have to go up there to Tampa in its own right and play their home games this year at George Steinbrenner Field. A lot has been made here about a potential move. There was an opportunity to have an enclosed stadium or a new stadium built more towards the waterfront there in Tampa. But there has been a lot of angst, too, about Stu Sternberg as the principal owner currently, where he hasn't spent a lot of money. Now, Dave, we have seen the Tampa Bay Rays work their roster and their payroll like a quadratic equation. I mean, they have been so good at being able to maximize every penny
right.
that goes into that team. That being said, there are things that need to be done from a stadium standpoint, from an economic standpoint. And I think this is really good news for the league overall. Knowing we are likely looking at expansion of probably two teams coming up in a handful of years. This was a checklist item for Rob Manfred that you needed to find ownership that was going to be able to be in place that would help get a new stadium built to keep the team in Tampa. All right, because we already know we've got Oakland now in Sacramento, eventually moving there to Las Vegas. So this is a big deal from a standpoint of this would pave the way, probably literally and figuratively, for Major League Baseball to move forward with expansion if the new ownership is approved and a stadium deal is reached here in the next year or so.
I will just say this, if we put it bluntly, the Trop was a dump. I mean, it was dimly lit. It was not a good fan experience. I've been there several times. One of my good buddies still lives there. We went to watch our guy, certainly Brandon Guyer, when he was playing there with the Indians back in the day. And I'll just say this. We were up there in the nosebleeds. We had a blast. Big group of about seven of us. And we had our own beer vendor by the end of the night. And the beer vendor, because we were the only sales he had, he was so cool, Jensen. He sat down and drank with us. That's when you know there's nobody else in the stands. All right. So, Tampa, get a new stadium. Let's do this one right because of the old place. Maybe God did us all a favor by getting rid of that thing. Is this news or noise? Jair Alexander, you and I talked about it. We didn't think he'd be on the open market very long. The Ravens sign Jair. Very team-friendly deal, by the way. One-year deal there in Baltimore. Is it news or noise that this signing is going to help the Ravens take that next and final step to a Super Bowl?
I mean, if there's a better word than massive, let me know what you would use, because you now have the opportunity for the Ravens to say we have the best secondary in all of professional football. Mm-hmm. And the addition, of course, of Malachi Starks in the draft, too. I mean, for people watching VSiN, watch at VSiN.com, and those listening SiriusXM Channel 158, here's what your potential starting secondary looks like. Marlon Humphrey, Nate Wiggins, Jair Alexander, Wuze, Hamilton, Starks. And then Adarius Washington. I mean, that is good luck getting the ball down the field through the air, man. Good luck all over the place.
That's criminal. If Malachi Starks is half as good as Kyle Hamilton patrolling center field, like, look out. And like, even getting Awuzie coming over, too. I like him back in his Dallas days. Jair, I still feel like can really play at a high level. To go with Humphrey, we'll figure out maybe Humphrey starting to get on the back nine a little bit. But I'm with you, man. I think it's a very significant signing. And I really do think right now, you think the Harbaughs, and certainly this one with John, he wants to play some defense just like his brother Jim wants to play some defense. So, yeah, defense is still being played there in Charm City. Is this news or noise? And I know it's right there in Cleveland, and I know people are talking about it already. It got a little heavy with the lead foot, shall we say, here with Shedeur Sanders. So does a career end before it even begins? Because he's pulled over Tuesday morning for allegedly driving over 100 miles per hour. It was past midnight. It was in a 41-mile-an-hour zone there, 41 miles over the posted limit, rather. So he's going to fight the ticket in court. Look, we don't want to take this too lightly because you're still going over 100 miles an hour. Somebody could have got seriously hurt here. But is this a problem that maybe the career is just not getting off to the good foot and it'll never be whatever it can be?
I mean, again, this is young people doing right. dumb things. I know people brought up, I think LeBron did this back in like 2007, 2008, when he was a ripe old age of 23, in Cleveland there. So people were like, oh, hey, is this Johnny Manziel 2.0?
Right.
Or, is this just... I got to believe Pops is not happy about it. And if there's anyone that could kind of bring the rain down on his young pups, it would be Dion. Probably been in the ear of Shedeur, like, what are you doing, man? Already enough scrutiny on you and enough pressure and all those narratives. Why add, more stress to your life here? So, don't condone this whatsoever. And hopefully it ends with him learning a very valuable lesson.
Well said. I hope this is noise. Let's hope that this is noise and this goes away and you learn your lesson. And again, I'm with you, like, guilty as charged. When I was that young, I did stupid things too and drove like a madman a lot of times because I had a lead foot. And then you learn, like, what's the rush? What's the rush? Like, the game of life, let's be like Shedeur, let this be a lesson. Hopefully it's just going to be a ticket. You can fight it, whatever you want to do. But you got a whole life ahead of you here, and it's a pretty good one. So let's just tone it down a little bit on the right foot. There's no need for this because, again, a lot of us have done stupid things in our past, so we're not going to get on you too badly here. But Johnny Manziel is a cautionary tale right there in Cleveland. Let's not go down that road here. And I'm sure Johnny would probably be the first one to tell you, do as I say, not as I did. So let's hope that those patterns change quickly. By the way, if you have not become a VSiN Pro subscriber as of yet, no better time than the present. We just had Greg on. He's got his great daily baseball picks for you right there at VSiN.com. Game 6 of the NBA Finals. Going to get into a lot of that here over the course of the next 2 hours. Best bets and player props there. And by the way, Tyrese Halliburton is still questionable tonight, so we'll figure out if he's able to go with that calf injury. How about UFC Fight Night? Oof, cannot wait to break this down here with Jamal Hill against Khalil Roundtree Jr. Should be a really good one. You got to get up early Saturday morning. That one's overseas. So we'll break that down there for you at VSiN.com. Steve Mackinnon with his power ratings, his betting trends as well. JVT has got some picks for you and some props as well. And Zachary Cohen with his tennis best bets. It's all there for you. $9.99 right now when you go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Jensen, very quickly, just wrapping up the Cleveland talk here with Shedeur. And I'm sure it's going to really start to ramp up now as we get closer and closer to training camps. But, like, when something like that happens, does that put him back on the back burner again for a guy like Dylan Gabriel? I just wonder in the pecking order if these off-the-field stuff, as minor as they may appear, could affect the on-the-field stuff.
I would have to imagine that Andrew Berry, Kevin Stefanski, you are looking at, well, we already have a guy in Joe Flacco, who has no problem getting to and from the facility legally and, is pretty good at what he's done even at this point in his career. So, again, you already had, kind of that chasm, right, of being able to try and close the gap at this point. That's why I said you just don't want any of these marks against you. So, yeah, I would say that there'll be some lessons learned, and there's going to have to be some penance done here for good old Shedeur before he gets back into good grace.
And this is when younger kids look at older people like myself now, and it's like, we're not trying to be preachy. We're just trying to tell you, man, we've been there. We've been there, done that. It's just there's no value in it now. I know it's hard to see then, at the time. So hopefully this is just a blip in the radar here for Shador as he begins his career in Cleveland. All right, when we come back, hour number two, Mike Palm will join us in studio. It's VSiN by the Books.